Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and now on the day that Sandy Hook Elementary School students return to class, we begin a January series about guns. There is so much loose talk and loose terminology. We thought it would be useful to spend some time every week this month, we'll do it on Thursdays, getting some facts about gun ownership in America, the gun laws and how they've changed over time, and some of the statistical associations between guns and crime and other violence. Our guide for this series is Paul Barrett. By day, he's the mild-mannered assistant managing editor of Bloomberg Businessweek. But in his secret life, he is the author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun, out in paperback on January 15th. Paul, thanks a lot for starting this weekly Thursday routine for the month, and welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks. Glad to be here, Brian.
And today we'll do a few vocabulary words, like I said before the break, like military style and semi-automatic. And we'll also compare this moment to the time after the Stockton, California elementary school massacre in 1989. So remind us about Stockton. What happened there and how similar was it to the tragedy in Connecticut last month?
Yeah, well, it was eerily similar. You had a situation where a deeply disturbed man who had some type of problem with Asian people approached an elementary school playground. This was outdoors as opposed to indoors. He was using a military-style rifle, semi-automatic rifle, as you referred to earlier. He shot up the playground. He ended up killing five children of roughly the same age as the Newtown children, wounding 29 people. And this, as you indicated, really kicked off the American anxiety about something called assault weapons. Now, what those things are is a tricky question.
Did Stockton lead to the assault weapons ban of the 1990s before we get to the definitions?
Absolutely. I think Stockton was the key turning point and focused the gun control movement's attention on these particular types of weapons. But it did not lead swiftly to the assault weapons ban enacted in 1994. And that time lag and the events in between are important to look at.
Well, let's get to those vocabulary words right away since they've already come up. Excuse me. And listeners, if you want to call in with a question for Paul Barrett, maybe there's a term with respect to firearms that you don't know. And we're not going to have a whole big picture gun control debate here on this segment. But we are comparing what happened after Stockton to what's happening now after Connecticut and putting some of the vocabulary words on the table so people can understand the whole conversation better. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Military-style assault weapon. We hear that over and over again. Let me play NRA leader Wayne LaPierre on Meet the Press last week.
My gosh, the people in the media, I revere their communication skills, but they have an obligation to be factual, to be truthful. And everything that these politicians are saying about that is not true. They say these guns are more powerful, not true. They say they make bigger holes, not true. They say they lose larger bullets, not true. They say they're weapons of war, not true. Everything they're saying, they say they're military guns like our soldiers use. That's not true.
So the last things he said there, they say these are military guns like our soldiers use. Not true. Weapons of war. Not true. True or not true?
Mr. LaPierre is sort of half true and half false, as is so often the case with these kinds of debates. From a cosmetic point of view and from a basic functioning point of view, the weapons are the same, and they are the same as what you're listeners see when they look on the front page of the newspaper or they watch television, look on the internet, and they see an American soldier with a black-colored, rather delicate-looking, surprisingly small, light rifle with a large ammunition magazine protruding from the bottom. The key difference in what LaPierre is focusing on is that unlike the military version of these rifles, the ones available on the civilian market are semi-automatic, not fully automatic. They are not machine guns, and that's the key distinction that he's focusing on.
And and you make a point of making that distinction in your book as well. So an automatic weapon, it keeps firing bullets rapid fire as long as you keep the trigger down.
Correct.
And a semi-automatic, you have to pull the trigger each time to fire a shot.
Correct.
So my question, because I don't know the answer to this, is then why is it even called semi-automatic as opposed to simply manual?
Yes, it is confusing. The semi-automatic term refers to the method by which the ammunition is loaded into the firing chamber. In any semi-automatic gun, and a pistol, a handgun, can be called semi-automatic. What happens is that the operation of the firing mechanism first ejects the spent casing and then automatically pulls a new round up and places it into the firing chamber so it's ready to go for the next pull of the trigger.
Aha. So never having done this myself, you can fire more rounds more quickly with a semi-automatic than a non-automatic?
Not necessarily. It's quite complicated. For example, let's shift over to handguns where it's a little easier to make the comparison. A six-round revolver, the traditional Smith & Wesson that was prevalent until the late 80s or early 90s, you can fire the six rounds out of that revolver quite quickly if you're well trained, probably at roughly the same speed that you could fire a semi-automatic pistol. However, when you run out of your six rounds, you then have to reload. And that's the key distinction here. Because semi-automatic rifles, semi-automatic pistols often come with large ammunition capacity. Not just six rounds, but perhaps 10 rounds, 15 rounds, 20 or even 30 or more. And when you have a weapon that has that kind of magazine capacity, the user can continue to fire until he's out of rounds, and that's the key distinction that people need to focus on.
Ah, but I usually think of that as a separate question. The number of bullets that the clip or the magazine can hold, different from whether the gun is automatic or semi-automatic or non-automatic.
It is a separate question, and our inability to keep these issues separate, our tendency to conflate the issues and to refer to assault weapons in a vague way as if they're sort of these magical weapons that can be fired at some type of superhuman pace is where we go wrong and where you basically where Mr. LaPierre wants to have the debate.
Yes.
Because then he can pedantically correct you and tell you don't know what you're talking
right.
about. If people would focus on magazine capacity, how many rounds can the particular user fire without having to reload, they'd really be at the heart of the issue.
So the Glock, the subject of your book,
yes.
A handgun, not a rifle, semi-automatic?
Absolutely. And the Glock is so important because it really led the semi-automatic revolution in handguns in this country. Until the Glock showed up on these shores in the late 1980s, the United States was a revolver gun culture. The Smith & Wesson dominated. And, you can have endless debates about the pros and cons of different firearms the way you can about different models of cars and so forth. But the Glock's initial huge selling point was ammunition capacity. The police in this country wanted a gun that could fire more often without having to reload, and that was Gaston Glock's big selling point.
Mark in Teaneck, you're on WNYC with Paul Barrett, author of Glock. Hi.
Hi, yes. I have a question, and I've heard this debated back and forth, and using the words clip as opposed to magazine, meaning the thing that you press the cartridges into before you insert it in the gun. Which is the correct term, and what's the difference?
Right, and they are used interchangeably in the media. I think I understand the difference on this one, but
yeah.
They are used interchangeably to talk about these extended round magazines or clips that can carry a lot of bullets.
Yes. This is another example of how gun enthusiasts enjoy catching people who don't know about guns making small semantic and terminological mistakes. And often the debate gets diverted into these issues. The simple thing is that almost all semi-automatic weapons use a magazine. Use the term magazine. Do not use the term clip, and you'll be on safe ground. A clip refers to a more static device that does not have the spring-loaded capacity that a magazine has. And again, it's the simple rule. Just refer to magazines, and you'll avoid this whole debate, which I think is kind of pointless.
All right, Mark, hopefully that answers that one. So we're always going to say magazine now to be on safe ground with that one.
Right.
And listeners, we're going to build a vocabulary list on our webpage as we do this series on Thursdays every month. And so if there's a question that you have about a word or a term, with respect to guns. You can post it to our website right now or at any time. Post the word that you would like us to have defined for you, and that's at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Now, to get back to the parallels between today and after Stockton, your book reminds us of the assault weapons ban debate in the early 90s after Stockton and how the real gun control groups, like the National Coalition to Ban Handguns, were resigned to taking what they could get with an assault weapons ban, even if it was mostly symbolic.
That is exactly right, and this was a real turning point for the anti-gun movement, because through the 70s and into the 80s, the notion of banning handguns was really central to the gun control movement, and it was seen as, if not an easy thing to accomplish, something that was at least worth debating. But by the late 1980s, even though crime rates were continuing to go up, and even though there were these horrible events like the Stockton shooting, the NRA had become deft enough so that it was basically at that point off the table politically to ban handguns, and gun control proponents were looking for some other dramatic action they could take. Stockton put on the table the notion of banning these semi-automatic rifles that looked an awful lot like the rifles that soldiers used, therefore raised the reasonable sounding question, who would need those rifles in the streets of America? Let's ban those.
But just the name of that advocacy group from back then shows how much things have changed. What happened to the National Coalition to Ban Handguns, a term we never hear anymore?
Right. Well, you know, all of the activists, the private sector activists who are still involved in this cause, started out wanting to truly ban handguns. I mean, another leading example of this is Josh Sugarman, who's one of the giants of the gun control movement, who still to this day, if you really pin him down, says, no, I want to ban handguns. But that has become politically infeasible. There simply is not a broad enough constituency in the United States, it turns out, to enact such a law. This is not a question of the NRA diabolically manipulating public opinion. It's the absence of a large majority of Americans who passionately want to ban handguns. It doesn't exist. In fact, in the through the 80s, if you did public opinion polls, people would at least say, majorities of respondents would say in the 50% range, 60% range, yeah, I would ban handguns. That number is now actually down in the high 20s. So we actually have moved away from the notion, in popular terms, that banning handguns is something we ought to talk about.
Even though, and we'll come back to this on a future program in the series, if you really wanted to reduce the number of gun deaths in America through gun regulation, you would ban handguns and leave the assault weapons alone.
Oh, absolutely. The vast majority of ordinary crime, the vast number of incidents that result in, you know, teenagers, young people getting killed, the vast majority, for that matter, of people killing themselves in suicides involve handguns. Handguns are the weapon of choice.
Mac in San Antonio, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling us. Mac, you there? All right. We'll try Tom and Seabright. Hey, Tom.
Good morning. How are you?
Okay.
I would like to ask the speaker, what percentage of our 14,000-plus murders a year are caused with semi-automatic or automatic weapons? And then number two is, do guns make us violent, or were we violent before? Like, why do we have so many murders in this country when other countries like Canada, England, Japan hardly have any?
Well, the first question, of course, is a quite specific empirical question. The second one takes you into realms of psychology, philosophy, and culture that it would probably take a lot longer to answer. To get to the first question, we actually have fewer homicides than you're suggesting. The number has been coming down, both homicides in general, gun-related homicides in particular, and it's now down below in the range of about 10,000, not 14,000. We have about 30,000 gun deaths a year, but the significant majority of those are suicides. In answer to the question of with which weapons are those gun homicides committed, the majority of them, the vast majority of them are committed with handguns, and the vast majority of those are committed with semi-automatic pistols that operate the way the Glock operates, although the Glock is not actually a large proportion of those things. So semi-automatic pistols are at the core of gun homicide in this country. Why are we a more violent society? By some measures, we're not. Our overall violent crime rate, if you mix in all crimes categorized in that way, to include simple assaults, to include rapes, to include forcible break-ins, is basically comparable to that of other industrialized democracies. Where the United States stands out, even within violent crime, is in gun homicides. There, we are off the charts compared to England, compared to Australia, compared to Canada. And I think the simplest, quick answer is because there are so many more guns around. We have 300 million guns in private hands in this country.
And we are actually going to try to tackle that more philosophical, cultural question in a future segment. And that is, we know that the countries that don't have easy access to guns, by and large, also have much less murder and violent crime. But is it a cause and effect, or is it something else? And we will try to at least tease out those correlations coming up in a future show. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there for today with Paul Barrett. Just getting going in this five-part January series. We'll do this on all five Thursdays during the month, trying to understand more about guns in America. And Paul Barrett is the author of the book Glock, The Rise of America's Gun, out in paperback on January 15th. Paul, thanks. I'll talk to you next week.
Terrific.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and you can keep posting your requests for gun-related vocabulary words at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show.